Welcome to episode 482 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Hey, Josh.
Hey, long-lost buddy and pal.
I had a birthday last weekend.
You did?
I had a rude awakening. Someone at my birthday gathering reminded me that I was actually turning a year older than I thought I was turning. Like, I had a number in my head, even though it didn't make sense mathematically, and that's what I was convinced I was going to be. But
whoops.
Nope. I forgot to add a one.
Imagine if it would have gone the other way, how much nicer that would have felt.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah. I seriously suck at remembering how old I am. I always have to do the math. Always.
That's funny.
Like, I've got a birthday in a week. I'm getting close to 40, and I still can barely keep track of how old I am.
That's crazy. Ridiculous. That's crazy. Yeah. Well, Normally now we would be reading email messages from our listeners instead of talking about how old we are. But we didn't get any email this week. So if you want to provide us with feedback for our next episode, you can reach us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. But in the meantime, we're going to dive right into our topic, starting with video. And it should probably not be any surprise to anybody that our first video story is about the Disney Plus service that Disney revealed this past week. And they gave an enormous amount of information in this service. So I'm going to run down some of the stuff, and then Josh, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, because frankly, I know I'm the Disney fanatic here, so I don't think people are really going to have too much of a question about what I think of this. So going through some of the details here, the content that they have is going to be from five major areas. It'll be Disney, Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, and I think this was a surprise to most people, National Geographic. Did you know that that was part of their lineup?
You know, I read a bunch about this announcement and don't even remember National Geographic being a part of this. That's cool.
It is cool. And it really broadens the appeal of this, I think. So let's consider that for a minute. And then let's think about the kinds of content that they're going to have in there. They're going to have original content, a lot of originals. I mean, a lot, not like CBS came to the market with two. They're going to have a lot of originals in this new service that they have. They're also going to have a lot of existing content. It's going to include all of the Star Wars and all of the Marvel movies as they're available for streaming. So obviously there are windows there, and it's not going to be day and date from being in the theater or maybe day and date from being available on disc. But when they hit the normal period of time that they'd be available for streaming, they will be exclusive to this service. They're going to have classic movies, and they're going to release more of those over time, but they have a few that they'll be starting out with already. Like I said, they're going to have many original new series, and those are going to include series based around Pixar characters, Marvel characters, and Star Wars characters, which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Some are live action, some are animated. They're going to have a ton of the Disney Channel series that are, well, and have been on television for years and years and years. They're going to have over 100 Disney Channel movies, and that's going to include stuff like the High School Musical and all of those, you know, that whole franchise. And it's going to be the exclusive home of the entire Simpsons catalog. And that's just kind of scraping the surface.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's already a ton. So, so much stuff.
Yep. And here is what I think is one of the smartest things. The content is going to be downloadable on their mobile apps, and it won't expire as long as your account is active. So you can download stuff to watch offline, like in the car, if you're on a road trip, or on a plane or, you know, with your kids or whatever, and that content will remain there and it doesn't suddenly disappear after 15 days if you haven't watched it, or 30 days if you have, or whatever. You know, like, there's no arbitrary fake rules about how long you're allowed to have this thing checked out.
Right, right. And that's really important for long vacations and things like that, or maybe just over the summer where you know you're going to be like loading up a kid's tablet with a lot of things for maybe a few vacations or long weekends away, and you just don't want to have to worry about this. There's nothing worse than being away from home and thinking that you've got your kid's tablet full of stuff that they can watch and have none of it work.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I can think of some things that might be worse than that, but that is bad.
Yeah, maybe that wasn't the right way to say that.
Now, the content on devices that support it is going to be 4K HDR capable. And initially, we know that they already signed deals with Roku and PS4. We're pretty much expecting it everywhere.
Right.
And here's the kicker. $699 a month or $70 for a year. $699. That is, I heard this great comparison. I believe it was on Marketplace. That's the price of a Chick-fil-A sandwich.
That's not the price of a Chick-fil-A. Where the heck do you live that a Chick-fil-A sandwich is $7?
DC area. Where do you live?
Come on. $7. In the Midwest, it's like, I don't know, like $7 for the whole meal.
I don't know about that. Okay. Well, anyway, that's it's a pretty good price for everything that you're getting. Compare that to $6.599 for CBS with commercials, which only has two originals, doesn't really have movies to offer, and is a ton of their legacy content. Or if you don't want commercials, it's $10 a month. This pricing, yeah, I think, is just brilliant. I think it makes it a no-brainer.
It really does. Like, it was going to be a no-brainer for you, regardless, because you're a Disney fanatic. But when I saw this announcement, read through all of the things that are going to be available to it, and then saw the price, I was like, all right, yep, I'm signing up. Like, there's no doubt. I am definitely signing up for this. And you know, the last time we were on, we talked about how I might unsubscribe from Netflix. Like, I'm definitely going to unsubscribe from Netflix at this point and sign up for this instead.
And this will be cheaper for you.
It'll be almost half the price. It'll be less than half the price because I'm on the top tier Netflix stream. So, yeah, I think this is awesome. I'm really, really excited about this. Jen will love having access to all of the Marvel movies. The kids will love having access to all of the other Disney content. Like, this sounds great. And there are rumors of bundles where they're going to bundle it with Hulu and with ESPN Plus, which I think ESPN Plus is a fantastic offering for sports fans at $5 a month right now. I could see myself fully jumping on board with a bundle like that, and, you know, killing Netflix and just have this. And I'm always going to have Amazon Prime for the shipping. So yeah, I'm super pumped about this. November 12th can't come soon enough.
Yeah, so this isn't available until November 12th. We do have to wait quite a ways to get this, but I am absolutely excited about it. It sounds like they've done what Disney seems to do pretty well repeatedly in the media space, which is watch what the industry is doing, take a step back, think about how you can do this in a way that's going to be like the best experience for everyone and still be beneficial for them. Now, there are some word that this probably won't be profitable for them until 2024, but that's how they're thinking about this. They're thinking about this as a long-term target, and that's a good thing.
Yeah. So you and I are definitely going to sign up for this. I'm definitely not going to sign up for this next thing we're going to talk about.
Well, right. So that was an example of something that I feel is doing it right. Now, here's one where I might assert they're not necessarily doing it right. And that is the Criterion Collection channel that we talked about before when they announced this, but it has launched now and it makes available about 1,000 or more classic, highly esteemed art house type films. Unless you're like a film major or a serious classic film buff, I challenge you to find maybe half a dozen titles in here that you've seen or even recognize. If you are a film student or majored in film or something like that, this could be gold for you. I don't know. It's hard for me to judge, but I hope it's worth a lot to you because it's going to cost $10.99 a month or $100 a year for just what we talked about right there. 1,000 films. That's it. And it's on all the streaming platforms, and it's on the Android and iOS mobile factors. It's, I don't believe, available on the web, and it is not going to be available on consoles, or at least not that they're talking about it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is one of those examples where I think of this as your classic, I don't know what the right term is here, because I understand that they have a property that has a certain value, but this is like your classic implementation where it's just fragmenting as opposed to like really adding value to a great number of people. Now, like I said, this is a long tail thing. So if you're in this crowd and you're excited about it, that's great. I don't understand how they sustain this. I don't understand how this business model will work for them. And I frankly think that they would have been better off with a licensing deal like they used to have, I believe, with Hulu in the past.
That sounds right. Yeah. Yeah, this is a huge hard pass for me. Like, there are almost no movies here I care about. And I think even if you were a big fan of these types of movies, this feels like a $5 a month service, not an $11 a month service.
Yeah, so we'll have to see. Well, you know, they had an introductory price of $9.99, I think.
Ooh.
So you could have saved a dollar.
Nope.
Okay. So let's talk about something else that I'm just not too excited about. Now, we have heard for probably a year or so now rumors that Logitech has been working on a new universal remote. And today they unveiled it. It is called the Harmony Express, and it is an Amazon Assistant powered device. So the assistant is on board, and it's actually on board. It's not like you talk to your assistant in the Echo that's in the room. It's built in, and there's a speaker on it, so it speaks back to you from the device if it needs to respond to anything. So that's kind of interesting.
From the remote.
From the remote itself. Yeah. So that's kind of interesting. It's a very minimal design. I'm frankly not a fan of the design. It's very obvious to me that the design firm that they had hired to do their kind of visual rebranding, and that's had a lot of influence in their recent keyboards and cameras and other devices that they've been putting out, had a big play or a big hand in the design of this device, because it's very different from anything they've done before. It has 9 buttons on it. 9. 9. And a navigation pad. 9. That concerns me a lot.
It's enough buttons for controlling a Roku, an Apple TV, and that sort of thing.
Right. I don't know about a DVR. I mean, they have ways of doing it, but for example, there's no channel buttons on there. So if you ever want to move a page at a time on your DVR, or if you want to just actually channel surf, which some people still do, you're not going to do that easily. So I'm frustrated by this. I don't get it. And just like the Kavo, they decided to change where the volume buttons are, because why not? Everybody else is doing it. So let's mix that up too. Now, the new hub is all new. It comes with a new app. It comes with a new hub. And that's the good news. The bad news is that new app and that new hub are completely incompatible with any of your existing Harmony remotes. Similarly, the new Harmony remote only works with the new hub and the new app. So everything is kind of new and incompatible with anything legacy. It's a whole new platform. It is built in a way that doesn't require a line of sight. You have the hub and a blaster from the hub, and it uses IP and Bluetooth and the blaster to control your devices, but that can be behind a cabinet, just like the current hub solution works. So that's a good thing. I like that. Now, here's where, if it didn't already fall apart for me, here's where it really falls apart for me. $250.
Uh-huh.
The Cavo is $100. $250. By the way, the Cavo is a voice remote. It's not Amazon's assistant, but it is a voice remote, a good voice service. I'm not saying that Amazon's isn't, but, you know.
You can get a Roku, like a full Roku with a voice remote for $50. All this does is control everything.
Yeah.
And when I hear something with the word express tacked onto the end of it, it makes me think this is the entry model and lower cost. And I guess it's cheaper than the Harmony Ultimate.
Right.
But $250 is insane for an entry level universal remote with voice control. I don't care if it's got Amazon's voice assistant built in with this. Like, granted, that's better. That is a better experience than any other voice remote, I'm sure. I actually am really excited about the overhaul of the app on phones for setting this up.
Oh, yeah. Because their app is on phones awful. Is
miserable.
Awful.
Yeah. It's so bad. So I'm excited about that. And I hope it's going to come to the rest of their lineup so that I can use that. Because I'm not buying this. And I don't know why anyone would. I would not recommend this remote to anybody under any circumstances.
and unfortunately, it's the price that does that, right? Like, I think the price they should have gone for, it still would have been high, but it would have been in line with their other pricing, is $179. $250 just doesn't make sense. I don't get it at all. I am actually probably going to get a review unit for this. So I hope to have a chance to try it. And I was very honest about it, that I'm kind of skeptical. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But I don't quite know what to think here. And I don't like this idea of, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, because people who know that I have a UX background are going to be surprised by this, or probably think it's a little hypocritical. But I'm tired of trying to remove buttons. I'm tired of this trend of design overruling practical functionality. I mean, that's the Apple remote right there, right?
It is. And I'm glad you brought it up, because I didn't want this to feel like trolling. But what I wanted to say was, is this all Apple's fault? When Apple came out with the Apple TV remote, well, really every Apple TV remote has been pretty devoid of buttons. There just haven't been many buttons on any Apple TV remote. But whenever Apple does anything, regardless of whether it's actually good or not, everybody else tries to copy. Apple puts a notch on their phones. Google says we can put a notch on our phones. Why? Apple says we don't need buttons, so everybody else removes buttons. No, we do need buttons. Buttons actually make things a lot easier to use.
So we'll have to see. We'll just have to see. It's going to depend on how good the voice interaction is. But as I've said before, I use voice sometime when I'm watching TV, but not all the time. And I'm just not convinced that it's going to be a good substitute for commands, when I could just go click, 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 and quickly scan through a couple channels. So
yeah, definitely.
We'll have to see. All right. Well, talking about Apple bashing, let's move on to our audio stories. So our first audio story, we normally would not necessarily cover something like this, except that it's getting a lot of press. So I think it's worth talking about, but I'm not going to put a lot of credence behind it. There are rumors going around that have been supposedly corroborated. Well, let's say this differently. A developer who is known, someone I follow actually, who is known for diving into Apple code and finding out what's going on in their product releases based on what's already in the code, has speculated and believes that there's a good chance, from what he sees in the code, that Apple is going to be breaking up iTunes into multiple applications. And this has been corroborated by another developer who works closely with Apple stuff. That is the extent of officialness to this. So Apple's not saying we're going to be breaking our stuff down. Like, there's nothing official here, but the headlines read that this is happening. So take it for what it's worth. It appears as if there are indications that there would be three different apps, a TV app, just like what we have on mobile, a music app, and a podcast app. And it's very likely that these would be built on Apple's Marzipan platform, which they demonstrated at the last developer conference, which is essentially an iOS app wrapper. And I'm grossly oversimplifying this, but it allows you to deploy an application that you originally built for iOS onto the Mac. So you can have that application run as a Mac window application. I am actually really trepidatious about this technology because I think we're going to see developers do a lot of terrible stuff with this and just decide that they don't have to build Apple applications anymore for the Mac. They can just build them for iOS and then, you know, they can work on the Mac too. And that they're going to be terrible. That's just not, that they don't work the same way. They shouldn't work the same way. You use them differently. But what about Windows? Like, let's say this is happening and I'm not going to cry over spilled iTunes, right? Like, I would be happy to see iTunes go away if they have an alternative that makes sense. I'm not excited about splitting it into a bunch of little things because I hate the proliferation of apps that we end up with when that happens. But if this works, then okay. But seriously, what about Windows? I mean, does Windows still just get stuck with the old iTunes and now they're only maintaining it for Windows? Or maybe they'll announce that Marzipan can also be used to deploy their applications to Windows too? Who knows? I don't know. I don't know where
that seems that so unlikely.
But, you know, we were, I think this is interesting just because we were just talking, actually, more accurately, we were just complaining about iTunes in the last couple of episodes. So maybe Apple really is thinking about ways of trying to, you know, do it better.
Maybe. I think your bit in there about Windows is the really interesting part here, because if they really go this full Marzipan route where they're just changing the Mac OS version of the app to be iOS version of the app, and there isn't a direct way to run that sort of thing on Windows, which I would not expect them to do. Like, they have no reason to, I don't think they have a great reason to essentially allow iOS apps to run in Windows, then I think iTunes in Windows becomes a legacy app that they barely touch going forward.
Right.
And maybe that's okay. Maybe people never use iTunes in Windows anymore. I'm not sure. I don't have an iPhone, but how many iPhone people are plugging their iPhones into computers now? Because it doesn't seem very necessary anymore.
Yeah, I think the only time it's really necessary is if there is content that you have in a library somewhere that you want to synchronize to your device. It's not just something that you're streaming. And that does still happen. People do still buy digital albums. People still buy CDs and rip them. People still buy video files or have video files that they want to get onto their devices. And so there, it is sometimes necessary to sync content if you want to do that. But most everything else can be done over the air now.
And can you purchase content via, you know, whether it's music or video from iTunes through a browser, or do you have to do it through the iTunes app?
You have to do it through the iTunes app.
Because I wondered if people are pretty much only using iTunes on Windows for syncing, then they could make iTunes go away, just have a sync app, and allow people to still purchase content via the web if that was a thing. But it doesn't sound like that's a thing.
So it's interesting you say that, though, because one of the things that did happen just this past week is that Apple suddenly made podcasts available for playback on the web. That was never the case before. You had to do that through iTunes. And so one of the things that I wonder, and I haven't actually seen any speculation about this, is this an indicator of the potential iTunes breakup or iTunes retirement? Are they looking at moving this stuff to the web, which you're right, may make more sense?
Yeah, it's less to maintain.
So, you know, interesting stuff to think about, but all speculation at this point. Well, except for Apple Podcasts, because now you can play them on the web.
Right. That's real news.
That's real news.
All right. Well, our other audio news is from, I don't know, the other side of the technological aisle, from Microsoft. Rumors here, these are coming from Brad Sams over at Throt.com. Rumors that Microsoft is planning to make their own Bluetooth wireless earbuds. These would be a follow-on to the Surface headphones, the big over-the-ear active noise-canceling headphones that Microsoft released last year. I think it's interesting that Brad Sams calls them, I don't remember the exact words that he used, something like, you know, that they were successful or something like that. I'm not sure how you call a product successful when you don't really know sales numbers, and I certainly don't see everyone walking down the street with a pair of Surface headphones on. In fact, I don't know anybody in real life who has a pair of Surface headphones.
And they've been out for 3 months?
It was at least last fall.
No, really? Was it?
And we're in the fourth month.
Oh. All right. Okay.
Yeah. It's probably been at least six. Yeah. So, but again, this seems pretty likely that they're at least working on this. Whether or not it comes out, we won't really know until they announce it. The speculation here is that they would probably come out this fall. The really interesting part about this article, and I wonder if maybe there's just a typo in here. I'm really not sure what's going on, but let me read a quote here. This is from the end of the article that's talking about like what sort of features these headphones might have. And he says, by looking at what the Surface headphones offer, Cortana integration, noise cancellation, and what I have heard is a way to improve interactions between a phone and the earbuds to make reading content easier on the phone. What? I don't have a clue what that could how could anything jammed into my ears make reading content on my phone easier?
No idea.
Yeah. I mean, maybe this is going to be some revolutionary game changer, or maybe he copy and pasted from the wrong Word document into it. Like, this doesn't make any sense to me at all. So I would love to hear some feedback from other people on what they think this might mean. Because that just seemed like a really, really weird... Like, I'm sure he didn't copy and paste from the wrong Word document. He must have meant to put this in here. I just can't even begin to imagine what that might actually mean.
I'm at a loss.
All right. Well, that makes two of us. And with that, let's move on to some gaming news. We're going to start... We've got a lot of Microsoft stuff. It's most of that stuff is fast, but instead we're going to start with Sony, because Sony sat down and gave an exclusive article to Wired talking about the next generation PlayStation, which will almost certainly be called the PlayStation 5. So that's just what I'm going to call it from here on out. They talked some about hardware, which is kind of surprising that they would, despite the fact that they haven't officially announced anything before this, other than to them saying a few months ago that they were definitely working on the next-gen console, which wasn't really news. But they're saying it'll definitely be based on a third-generation AMD Ryzen CPU with 8 cores. So basically building on the same architecture that's in the PlayStation 4 and that's in the Xbox One. Next-generation AMD GPU based on their Radeon Navi, I believe it'd be pronounced Navi family. I don't really know a lot about this particular GPU technology, but apparently it supports ray tracing. I didn't know AMD had any ray tracing technology. I thought that was all NVIDIA's game right now, but apparently AMD does. And Sony is saying that with this GPU, they're planning to support 8K graphics. And I want to take a moment here to say, I think that's actually kind of dumb. Like, let's stop already with the crazy resolution jumps. We don't really need 4K at this point. It's going to be a long time before anyone needs 8K. How about instead we take the power that's going to come from these next generation consoles and maybe try to do 4K at 60 frames per second all the time, which we can barely do now. Let's try and set that as the goal. And instead of just going crazy on resolution, and maybe even like for a game console, there's not really any reason to go above 60 frames per second either. So we don't really need to go crazy in terms of frame rates either. So instead, how about we just take all of this horsepower and make games look even better, even more realistic? I don't know.
Crazy
idea.
Sounds
like a crazy idea, but it shouldn't be. Like, we don't need higher resolution and frame rates that suffer because of that. Let's get solid performance and graphics that look better. That's what I want out of this next generation. One thing I do want out of this next generation is faster loading times. And Sony is saying that the next console will have an SSD inside of it. I wonder if that's actually like regular traditional SSD or if that's like NVMe or all of these other types of solid state technology. I don't think they really got into the details of that, but they said they were able to test Spider-Man, which came out last fall on PS4 on this new console with SSD. And they were able to see loading times when using fast travel within the game to go in between areas of the map drop from taking 15 seconds to load to being 0.8 seconds. Yes, give me that. That is what I want more of in my games. Absolutely. No one likes waiting around on all of these loading screens. So SSD would be nice. And with the cost of SSDs lately, this seems totally doable. Like, SSDs have gotten so cheap. But if you're talking 8K graphics, like, these games already regularly are 50 to 100 gigs in size. If we're going all the way to 8K graphics, do these become 2 and 300 gigabyte games? If so, you're not going to be able to get a reasonably priced SSD that's going to hold more than a couple of games at a time.
Yeah.
So, not exactly sure what they're thinking there on how they're going to make that all work. The other big things, kind of big, but not really, it will have physical media. They didn't specifically say a Blu-ray drive or a 4K Blu-ray drive. Please, it's got to have a 4K Blu-ray drive this time. But they did say physical media. That's not going away just yet. I think we've got one more generation of consoles with physical media. And maybe the bigger, more surprising thing is it will be backwards compatible. PS4 games will work on the PS5. The PSVR will work on the PS5. So really taking a page out of Microsoft's playbook there, it's a big deal to be able to play your last generation games on your current generation console. So I think that's really, really great news. And that's pretty much it. I don't know when we can expect more news about the PlayStation 5 because Sony is not going to be at E3 in June. So it's whenever they decide to have their own event. All right, that's enough Sony stuff. Let's get on to some Xbox news. There had been rumors for a while, at least a few weeks, that Microsoft was planning to offer a bundle or combo service, you might call it, called Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. It's true. They announced it today. This is very easy to describe. It is Xbox Live Gold and Xbox Game Pass as one subscription for $14.99 a month. That breaks down pretty well if you're paying month to month for things, because Xbox Live Gold and Game Pass currently as individual things cost $9.99 a month each. So if you're paying monthly, you save $5 a month, which is a pretty decent chunk of change, obviously, here. If you're paying yearly, though, you get discounts on Xbox Live Gold. You don't on Game Pass. If Game Pass is $10 a month, period. If you buy it for a year, it's $120. You don't get a discount for buying bigger chunks at a time. But Xbox Live Gold, you do. It's $60 MSRP if you buy it yearly. But frankly, most people, people in the know are looking for deals on Amazon. Like, you can regularly find a year subscription to Xbox Live Gold for $40.
Yeah, you can. But I don't think by any means it's most people. What most people probably do is they probably have it on auto renew. And they forget about it every single year until it auto-renews.
Yeah, that's probably true. So here's the thing that gets kind of interesting in terms of math. Game Pass Ultimate, $15 a month. If you multiply that by 12, it's $180 a year. That's the same price as buying Xbox Live Gold and Game Pass for a year at a time. Which kind of makes me wonder, is this partially to combat people who are trying to find other ways to get Xbox Live Gold cheaper? It's probably not, because it's probably not the majority of people who are doing this. I think it is more just along the lines of, let's make this as convenient as possible for people. But this is awesome. Like, $15 a month for both of these services is really good. And if I wasn't already like using Bing Rewards and stuff like that to try and get my Xbox Live Gold for free, and the Joe that I do story players with, he makes up enough Bing points every single month that he gets Game Pass for free. And like, he's never paid for a month of Game Pass because he's that on it when it comes to the Bing Rewards or Microsoft Rewards, I guess it's called now. But yeah, this sounds like a phenomenal deal. And, you know, if you're a parent who isn't a gamer, but you're paying for this stuff for your kids, like to be able to get both of these services for them for one simple subscription that's actually kind of less money and way less thought, it's awesome. This is a no-brainer. I really like this option.
Yeah, cool.
All right, one more Xbox story. This had also been rumored for a while. What do you mean, not really?
Go ahead.
This had also been rumored for a while. The Xbox One S All Digital Edition. Yep, the Xbox One SAD Edition. It's official. It's coming very soon. This is just an Xbox One S without the 4K Blu-ray drive. It's coming May 7th. It will include Minecraft, Forza Horizon 3, and Sea of Thieves. Let me remind you, Forza Horizon 3 is not the newest Forza Horizon. That one is 2.5 years old at this point. It's still a great game, but it's not the newest one. And the all-important part here, the cost, $250. Now, here's an interesting quote from Microsoft's press release here also. Available for pre-order today, $249. The Xbox One S All Digital Edition is $50 less than the Xbox One S. And we expect to maintain at least that price difference between the two consoles going forward. So when you get to the holidays and all of the Xbox One S bundles drop to $250, then we see the Xbox One SAD Edition drop to $199. That's basically what this means. And hopefully what this means is there are already bundles available on Amazon or other retailers that are $250 or even sometimes a little bit less for a regular Xbox One S. So hopefully that means that we'll be seeing this very soon at prices significantly lower than $249. So I've already talked a lot about the Xbox One S. I don't think you were on the episode that I talked about this, though. Like, do you have any other extra comments about this thing? I mean, you're not in need of a secondary Xbox in your house, but
no.
But what do you think about this?
I guess it makes sense. I don't really have a good feel for, something that's confusing me about this is, does it have onboard storage? It has to, right?
Oh, yeah. It still has a 1 terabyte hard drive, just like the Xbox One S.
I feel like this doesn't say that anywhere.
It doesn't say that anywhere, which is super weird.
So that was confusing me a little bit because I'm trying to figure out, okay, well, then this is really, I mean, if you look at it, it is, you would describe this as, oh, it's an Xbox One S without a hard drive. That's, or without an optical slot.
Right.
That's exactly what it looks like.
Which is exactly what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess, I don't know. For me, the reason I have it is because it's a 4K Blu-ray player.
Right.
So,
and I'm a little disappointed that it's not less expensive because that 4K Blu-ray player seems like it has to cost more than $50, but maybe it doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. All right. I think you were alluding to this not being the last Xbox story because we should remind people about the new free games from Xbox Games with Gold.
Exactly.
Because it's the second half of April. Okay, that makes sense. So you still get access to the Technomancer all month long on Xbox One. But now that it's the second half of April, you can get Outcast Second Contact available. Well, for about the next month. And on Xbox 360, you get Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon 2. So those are your new free games available on Games with Gold. PlayStation Plus games don't change. It's still Conan Exiles and The Surge. I think that's it for our news, Richard. So let's jump into what's going on in our entertainment centers.
I have a replacement Drobo operating as my Plex store.
Really? Like, you've got a new Drobo already and it's already set up?
Yep.
Wow.
I told you last time that we were talking about this, that I sent my old one in. We'd see if they'd actually replace it or not. They replaced it in kind with, I assume, brand new, but maybe refurbished, who knows, and put my drives in. They did not have to reorganize or anything. It just worked.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. So for now, I'm happy and I'm not going to mess with it too much. Now,
right.
I reported this news over on the Reset forums and some people over there seemed significantly less happy about this situation because I know that there are a lot of people who don't like Drobo as a storage solution, particularly if you're in probably into more, I don't know what the right word would be, but more traditional storage devices that handle data more predictably, I guess, is the way that I would say that. And Drobo is a black box in all sense of the word.
Oh, it for sure.
It works or it doesn't work. And if it doesn't work, there's really nothing you can do about it. Because it's just not something that you can troubleshoot. So I realize that I am kind of putting my trust in Drobo again by putting my data in there again. But at this point, it's working and I'm happy about it. And I didn't have to re-rip everything into all new drives into a new box, which I would have had to do. There was no way around that because I could not have recovered this.
Right. Yeah, now, that would have been awful.
Some advice that someone over on the forum gave me was that I should probably back this up. And they are probably right. But it's really hard for me to justify the expense of equipment to back up roughly 20 terabytes of information.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. That'd be a lot. A whole lot.
So I have to really think through this. I'm not going to mess with it right now, but I have to think whether that's something I want to figure out if and how to do.
Mm-hmm.
All right. On the video side, I have been watching a couple things. I started part two of Making a Murderer. That was the series on Netflix about Stephen Avery and his nephew who were accused and imprisoned for killing someone. And again, just like all of these true crime series, casts a lot of doubt on how the case was handled. Whether they're guilty or not, it's not necessarily solving yet, but the way the way the case was handled seems very suspect. And so they're following through on that on a second season. I finished season 8 of Hawaii Five-0, so now I can start the season that's in play now. I started Alex, Inc. Do you know anything about this?
No, I've never even heard of this.
This is basically a one season, I think it's a one short season, TV sitcom version of Alex Blumberg's life. Startup. Basically starting Gimlet.
Interesting.
Yeah. I watched one episode. I haven't watched the second one yet. I'll let you know.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Also watched Shameless, but I'm not up to date on that. I've been watching Superstore and The Orville. I am up to date on those shows. I love those, as I keep mentioning. I finished series 1 of The Office, keeping up with the folks on Court Killers. And I have watched all of season 7 now and have started, as it just premiered last night, or two nights ago as we're talking, season 8 of Game of Thrones. And of course, we are following that on Let's Talk About Thrones. And we are now doing episode per episode, hitting just 2 days after the episode's premiere. So they have the episode out, we talk about it the next night, and we drop the episode the next day so that people can keep up with what is going on if they want to be listening to our show. And we have a lot of cool guests lined up for this short season, only 6 episodes this season, but we already had a guest on this week's episode, and we have a bunch of other guests coming up, including Tom Merritt in 2 weeks, and a couple other names that people should recognize. So definitely enjoying that and looking forward to more of that. So how about you, Josh? What have you been watching, playing, doing, building?
Well, it is the NHL playoffs, and you might suspect that I've been watching a bunch of hockey. Unfortunately, you'd be wrong, because my life has been absolutely bananas. And tonight is the 4th game in the Penguins' first playoff round, and I've watched in total maybe an hour out of those 4 games. That's really frustrating for a number of reasons, the most of which is game 1 was last Wednesday. I signed up for Sling TV for all of this, and I knew I was going to be home late, but I planned to watch the whole thing from beginning to end. So I used Sling's DVR, and it totally crapped out on me. It didn't work at all. I got in my car to leave my Wednesday night appointment and thought, I will start the stream up on my phone and listen to it, not watch, listen to it while I drive home. It would not work. I thought, maybe it's just an issue with me not being on Wi-Fi. I'm sure it'll be fine when I get home. It was not. It didn't work on my phone. I got the same error message on my Android TV. I got the same error message on my Xbox One. It would not work. I could not start the game from the beginning. I had to watch it live. And at that point, it was 8 minutes left in the third period. So that sucked. And then I basically just didn't have time to watch the other 2 games. And they're down 3-0 in the series. They're probably done. So I signed up for 2 or 3 months of Sling TV for essentially nothing at this point. Thanks, Pittsburgh.
Yikes. Come on.
I'm normally a lot happier about hockey in April, not this year. Video games have been good, though. Obviously, continuing to play a little bit of NHL when I had time, and making essentially regular date nights to play the Division 2 with Joe D'Estasio and a couple of other people. Yeah, that game is just fantastic and still absolutely loving it. Other than that, not really a whole lot going on here. You know, maybe I should give a quick update on the Marvel movie situation in my house. I know our listeners love this. Jen and I did sit down to watch Avengers Infinity War as a recap to get ready for the next one. And got about halfway through it, and it was really late. And we're like, all right, let's finish this later in the week or something like that. We haven't done that yet. But she has just given up on me. And I don't know if she watched both Ant-Man movies, but I know that she watched Actually, I think she has. I think she watched Ant-Man, and then yesterday she finished up Ant-Man and the Wasp, and she likes them both, and she refuses to tell me anything about them. And if there's something important going into Endgame from Ant-Man, I'm just not going to know because I'm the cranky old jerk who won't watch it. So that's our Marvel situation. I don't even know when we're going to get to see it. Maybe we'll get a sitter for that night, but I don't know. So that's it for what I've been watching and doing and playing around with in my entertainment center.
All right. Well, before we get out of here, just a quick announcement that I was on this week's episode of Cord Killers. So I had an opportunity to talk again about the Disney Plus service and other stuff going on in the cord killing, cord cutting space. And I also had to admit to Brian that I stopped listening to most of Spoiler in Time. Because they were future spoiling me.
Right.
So that was a lot of fun. Check that out if you're interested. We'll have a link in the show notes.
Cool. Well, in addition, in our show notes, you're going to find all of our contact information. But a couple worth pointing out here. We're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard. And the website is just at DigiMediaZone, D-I-G-I MediaZone. We're also on Facebook. And there's the email address, all that stuff. Just go to the show notes for that. We also have some other podcasts for you to enjoy. I'm in the middle, sort of. Joe and I got together last night to record our spoiler cast for Story Players of the final episode of the final season of The Walking Dead, which is the final game that Telltale ever made. It took a while, though, and we were getting tired, so we didn't finish it, and we have to finish recording tomorrow. So that'll be available in a few days' time once we finish recording and I have time to edit it. So that's what's going on Story Players. Richard, you've got a show called Home On, covering smart home tech. What's going on with that show?
I do, and I know that the last time we spoke about this, I was talking about a discussion with smart offices in... Well, a discussion about smart offices in Australia, and we had some scheduling problems there. So I ended up substituting an episode where I am including a kitchen panel that I facilitated at the last Kitchen Summit, and that discussion is already out there by the time that you're listening to this, because I published it for Wednesday morning. So you will have a new episode of Home On talking about kitchen commerce. And I have guests there from Fresh Hub, or I should say panelists in that discussion from Fresh Hub, from Amazon, and from GE Appliances. So it was a really good discussion about how to do commerce in the kitchen without being annoying about it. Like, how do you do it in a way that consumers are going to take to? So I hope you enjoy that.
Nice. Very cool. All right. Well, we also do this show live, typically on Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. There's audio, there's video, and a chat room for you to be a part of the show along with us. We would love to have you join us the next time we do this, which isn't going to be next Tuesday. Because Richard and I both have other things going on next Tuesday. So maybe in a couple weeks' time, you can join us for that. It's a lot of fun. But that's going to do it for episode 482. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.